question. So yeah, I will talk about something very simple, actually. It's an idea, a proposal. What if we think about quantum mechanics in a suitable way so that we can see it in the language of operational probabilistic theory as a time-symmetric theory? And this is inspired in part by the desire to develop a theory which can treat indefinite causal structure, which is expected to be relevant in the context of quantum gravity, and builds upon work that I've done in collaboration with Fabio Costa and Czaslaw Bruckner. And part of this is also inspired a lot by the interesting discussions that we had in Benaske in the workshop on causal structure in quantum theory. And I thought it would be interesting to present these ideas to this audience because I think they address some of these questions. So let me say just very briefly to begin with, in what sense the standard formulation of quantum mechanics is not symmetric under time reversal. Well, basically it's because a system is described by an object, a state, rho, which evolves in time. And this object, the operational meaning of it is that it describes probabilities for the outcomes of all possible measurements that one could perform on the system at time t. And these probabilities are conditional on events in the past generally. And I will make this more precise later when we get into the framework of circuits. But of course, the state itself may depend on space-like separated events, even in the future. But what is sure is that this does not describe probabilities conditional on events that are on the same system after the measurement is performed. And of course, in quantum mechanics, the probabilities are given by this rule, which is considered one of the main rules of the theory. And of course, people have addressed from various perspectives this problem. And one of the notable approaches that I will refer to later is the two-state vector formalism. It was noticed already in the 50s by Watanabe that if you consider the probabilities between two events, for the outcomes of a measurement between two events, some pre-selection and post-selection, they have a symmetric form. He proposed, and this was later discovered by Aharonov, Bergman, and Leibovitz independently, that we can describe the system at the intermediate time by some kind of object like this, which they call the two-state vector. There are many other approaches. I'm only mentioning this one because it will be relevant. And of course, at this moment, I mean, one can ask all kinds of questions, especially they are relevant in the context of probabilistic theories. Now, if this is the state, why are the probabilities nonlinear in the state, or why are they non-contextual functions of the operator that's supposed to describe the measurement outcome and so forth? Well, I will take an approach. I will try to understand time symmetry from the point of view of operational theories, which recently have attracted a lot of interest. What is the idea behind the operational approach? Basically, it tries to understand quantum mechanics as a theory that gives probabilistic predictions or rules about elementary laboratory procedures such as preparations, transformations, and measurements. And in its modern form, this was initiated by Hardy, and in the last decade or so, there has been a lot of progress in understanding quantum mechanics in these terms. Specifically, people have been able to reconstruct the theory based on different information theoretic principles, which seems therefore a very promising approach. And I will specifically like to know whether we can think of quantum mechanics as a time-symmetric theory in a language that is suitable in principle to describe more general theories than quantum mechanics, for example. So here is a sketch of what I'll talk about. I will first address the problem in the circuit framework, which is a well-established framework in which these reconstructions can be said to work in most cases. And then I will, I will propose sort of a solution or some idea of how we can maybe view quantum mechanics in a time-symmetric form. And then I will go to the process matrix framework. So it will be a sort of extension of this previous formalism, which is a time-symmetric extension. And I'll discuss relation to the two-state vector formalism. Actually, what we find will be extremely closely related, although with a modification. I will discuss a problem that I find particularly intriguing in this time-symmetric setting. What is causation? Can we define causation? This seems particularly relevant when you start thinking about potentially imposing a causal structure on space-time or having indefinite structure there and so forth. At the end, as a kind of toy model, I'll describe how I see the potential of this approach, maybe to build a field theoretic picture and so on. So in the circuit framework, here I will refer specifically to the work of Kiribello, Dariano Perinotti, and Hardy. The basic notion is that of an operation or test, which is defined as one use of a device with an input and an output system. And it is described by a set of events labeled by some outcome index J. And this, in the case of quantum mechanics, of course, as you know, corresponds to the input and output systems would be described associated with Hilbert spaces. These events would be completely positive maps from the space of linear operators over the respective input and output. And they satisfy this completeness relation that the sum of them is a trace preserving map. Now, basic operations in the circuit framework, they can be composed. And these notions of compositions, which are crucial, they have a very deep relation to category theory, which has been explored by Kuke and collaborators, Abramsky and Kuke. And I will not go in this depth here. I will just review quickly the main assumptions that go behind just to formulate the theory. So there is an identity operator. One also has the notion of preparation operations and detection operations. Here that you have the trivial system as an input, and here you have the trivial system as an output. I'm already using notation for quantum language, anticipating that we will talk about quantum mechanics later. One also has a notion of parallel composition and so forth. So with these tools, one can form a circuit, which is a directed acyclic graph with no open wires. And in fact, in these approaches, one is assumed to always connect the circuits in a sequence without forming loops. And one of the motivations is to go beyond that picture. And the key idea is that an operational probabilistic theory prescribes joint probabilities for every given circuit. These are joint probabilities for the outcomes of the tests. This equivalently can be formulated, I will show, in terms of preparation and detection, as in the Pavia approach. What is important to emphasize here is that what a circuit means. Of course, it is not a mere sequence of some operations that someone applies. It really is a complete picture where, by definition, the wires are the only means of through which information exchange between these regions, if you wish, is established. That's really deep, in my view. Equivalently, one can say that for any preparation and detection test one, the theory prescribes joint probability with this factorizability condition. Now, what I would like to stress at this point is that actually a theory is completely defined by specifying the possible operations and the probabilities for the outcomes of all possible circuits. And this is crucial because later I would like to argue that a specific formulation is a theory, which is maybe a good theory. Well, we'll see. Well, but of course, the description of a theory can be simplified significantly. In fact, that would not be a real theory. One would like to extract the essential parameters. So one groups the events into equivalence classes, and this gives rise to the notions of states, effects, and transformations, where states are the equivalence classes of preparation events. So this equivalence means indistinguishability. If you have a preparation event, no matter to what detection event you connect it, it will always So if two preparation events yield the same joint probabilities when connected to any detection device, they are deemed equivalent and so forth. So in this language, we can already formulate precisely where the asymmetry is, and it is captured by this axiom called the causality or no signaling from the future by the Pavia group. And basically, it's the following. If you have a preparation operation and a detection operation, the joint probabilities are such that if you sum up, if you calculate the marginal probability for the preparation, it is independent of what the specific detection operation is. So this is the same. So you sum up over all possible J, and this is the same for any detection that you can put here. Okay, in quantum mechanics, of course, we know that this is the case. In quantum mechanics, the states, and in this language, these are unnormalized states. They are unnormalized density matrices. These guys are POVM elements, and obviously, we have this condition satisfied. So now, this brings me to the idea of how to perhaps reformulate the theory to see it in a time-symmetric form. So remember, the basic notion was that of an operation, which is defined as one use of a device. So here one might ask, what is exactly this? What does it mean, one use of a device? So what is a device? Is it a machine? Is it some configuration of things that somehow arise in some circumstances? Now consider the following situation. Consider that we have some agent, Alice, in some closed box, again with an input and output system, where what she will do is precisely the following. With some, she will toss a coin or use some other means. So with some probability, P of alpha, she will apply different device, different operations. And so she will use different devices. Let's say that the device means, for instance, some machine. So this device, the operations associated with the machines are here labeled by alpha. And now, of course, one can notice that I can regard the same thing as one big operation, which is just the whose events, the completely positive maps. So here now, from now on, I will be interested specifically in quantum mechanics. So the previous was just to give the basic concepts that in which we want to put the formulation of quantum mechanics. So one could say that the whole experiment is equivalent to this collection of completely positive maps. And it's natural now to ask, okay, is this fundamentally different from the application of a single physical device, whatever device means, which has this number of outcomes? I mean, the fact that we talk about Alice in the laboratory, is it important somehow? I mean, the theory prescribes, it postulates the existence of this isolated experiments that we can connect by wires and establish joint probability distributions. And of course, this doesn't come by accident. I mean, it corresponds to something that we do in reality. But to what does it correspond? Specifically, when you do a test, to what exactly does it correspond? An isolated test as one that qualifies to be put in a circuit. Because by definition, remember, in a circuit, for example, when you use a particular test or operation at a given time, you do not condition this on past outcomes. Any possible communication conditioning is included in the wires. So in some sense, in a circuit, an operation is freely chosen relative to past outcomes if you think of someone choosing it. But the theory doesn't say anything about how an operation is being chosen or how it should be chosen. We find the correspondence of this in reality, and we see that it works really well. We can make sense of that. But so in that particular case, I would say that no, these two things are equivalent because in my view, they, at least from the outside, they're completely indistinguishable. And this is not a Wigner's friend problem. This everything is classical. I imagine that Alice is just there performing this procedure, And she tells me the result of her outcome and her choice. But for me, this is one total experiment. Equivalently, we can ask the following. Imagine that I'm given a machine which does this inside. So it does the big test with the many outcomes. And we only obtain information about a subset to which the outcome belongs. Is this fundamentally different from learning that Alice applied a specific test or operation? Whether Alice is going to tell me that she did that, or the device is going to output a particular number that tells me that. I think that, again, these are not fundamentally different, because they are indistinguishable. So what we observe here is that the notion of operation is such that it is possible to say that subsets of the outcomes of devices or operations also can be considered operations. But not, in the standard formulation, not every subset of outcomes can be considered an operation. Only special subsets, and these are those that the sum of the CP maps of the outcomes is proportional to a CPTP map.
By sum of CP map, you mean subsequent application?
No, one single application, and each of the...
Addition.
The trace-preserving condition, basically. So here is, can we not regard as an operation any subset of the outcomes of an operation? I think this sounds quite elegant if we were able to do that, because somehow it is very unified and doesn't make this distinction. And so this is the proposal that I want to explore. Does this make sense? Is it a good theory? Is it not? Now, what is interesting to note here is that if I define an operation like this, basically I want to call any subset of the outcomes of an operation. Every such operation can be implemented by a local procedure. Alice could do that. Of course, she might have to wait because she needs post-selection in general to accomplish it. But she to do normal preparations here, to set up any experiment, she needs to do pre-selection, if you wish. So, of course, it's natural, this in a time-symmetric approach. But I think it is nice that this thing, it corresponds to something that has a local description. She can accomplish this and know that she has accomplished it without having to know what happens outside. So this is one indication why I think this is not such a bad idea. And also, if we believe that, by definition, the correlations between such a closed experiment are established solely through the wires. The same we could say it about this subselected or selected this subset of outcomes too. We can say that the only means through which the correlations between it and outside world is established is again through these connections. But what is important here is that obviously it will be the case that operations are not up to the choices of agents in this approach. This is actually one of the motivations. I've tried to make sense of agency, and especially in relation to causality. And my intuition is in part that it would be nice if we could not use them somehow, if we do not have agents. So Alice is just a witness in such a picture. I wouldn't say that she chooses. I wouldn't say that she chooses her operation even when she chooses it. Because, what does choice mean? It's some variable. And here too, sometimes certain operations will arise, and we will have knowledge that a specific operation is happening, and we can ask what is the probability for its outcome. So basically, the idea is this: now, with this redefined notions of operations, we can construct circuits as before, and we can have joint probabilities for the outcomes. Just to summarize how I see the philosophy behind this. So these are like intuitively something like regions of space-time, and And in these regions, there could be certain events. And the theory tells us the description of what is going on there, these events. And it tells us how to associate probabilities. And it also, I mean, different agents, but here agents maybe as rational agents who have knowledge, observers, can have different information. And someone might know, for instance, that a specific outcome is not part of the outcome of the outcome that occurs inside, and he should also be able to describe this in the same unified language. So, of course, we will have to have some changes here to the rules, because some operations are incompatible if we adopt this definition. So even if they have the same input and output system, in the usual formulation, we can connect in sequence any devices that have the correct input and output system. But here, for instance, say you have a preparation. I can call this a preparation operation. I prepare a state zero. I can call this a detection operation of a certain kind, as I defined. These are not compatible, obviously. So we have to, we can introduce, let's say, a null operation, like the null event, when you compose just the outcomes of operations. But in this case, since every outcome is again considered an operation, we have to have that thing. So some of these things will have to be forbidden. Okay. And now, of course, one can start developing the theory to see what is the rule for the probabilities, what are the equivalence classes. And specifically, since we require that any subset of events of any operation defines an operation, let's consider, say, two standard operations, say a preparation test, which is a set of unnormalized density matrices, and a POVM. One can, of course, use Bayesian rule just to calculate what the probabilities are for these operations that are defined with subsets of the full set of outcomes that we normally consider is the complete set. And one can see that it is given by this. Now, what one notices from this formula is that if I have, for example, a preparation operation, which is some collection of row I and some other, maybe obtained again through some post-selection or something, which is just a constant multiplying each of these rows, these are equivalent because the constant cancels. And the same holds for this detection events. I mean, if I have a collection of such events and another where these are multiplied, so these are the original matrices that we use in the POVM formulation. If you obtain another one multiplied by alpha, these are equivalent. So this is a parameter that makes no physical difference in this context. So we're going to normalize the operation. So we will define that the preparation operation is, again, just as it is. For preparation, this doesn't make much difference. It is just, an ensemble of states. We require that the sum of these has trace one. For detection operations, will now be described like this, so just to get rid of this overall constant. Now, I take a different normalization here, just to keep it close to what we normally use when we speak about POVMs. They have the property that they are defined like this. The trace is equal to this. It's just a matter of choice. Any subset of the outcomes of an operation defines a new operation, and we can see how the new elements are related to the old ones now. It is like this. You start with a given collection of operators that satisfy this thing, select only events within some subset, then the new operation is just the original elements in the subset divided by some constant or multiplied by some constant to make it normalized. And now with this rule, it tells us how to realize any of these defined things. So you can imagine that I just postulate to you operations are this collections of outcomes, these collections of matrices that have this, for instance, this normalization in the case of detection. Now this tells us in particular how we can realize anything of that kind, starting from a standard operation using post-selection. But what I want to stress is that we're not saying that this is how it should be obtained. This is just an update rule for how you're going to describe your operation. But the starting operation can be arbitrary. So now we are not claiming that there are some operations, such as, for instance, this detection operation, that are more complete than others. So What we have done is just renaming things. We said, okay, this was called operation, now I'm gonna call this operation, but there is something extra here. So we're dropping the assumption of this, that there exists this complete operations. So one can calculate joint probabilities, they will be given by this, all this, some formula like that, which we can rewrite introducing this, for instance, this rho bar and e bar. Rho bar would be just the sum of these operators, e bar would be the sum of these operators. And the reason why I'm saying is that this is because we can define states and effects as one normally does. Here, just to note, of course, that preparation and detection are incompatible when the outcome is zero, obviously. So now, before I go to the next slide, let me just say that the proposal here is that this is the basic probability rule. So somehow, the claim is that the theory just specifies the existence of this kind of operations when they can be connected to each other and claim and says what the probabilities for the, what the joint probabilities would be when they are connected. And they're given by this. There is no, this is not, so the idea is not to look this as a Bayesian rule applied for what we, on the Born rule. So one can define states as they are normally defined. These are just the equivalent preparation events. And one can see from the previous formula that they are given by this pair of matrices now. I will just do this for completeness. This is not particularly instructive, but I will do this for completeness to see that we can play the same game. This will be just a pair of matrices where this one was the sum of all the things in the preparation, and this is the specific outcome in the normal language. Similarly, here we have this pair of events where this one is normalized, this one is smaller than or equal to the other. And in this language, we can speak about like the joint probabilities of a state and effect, if you wish, and it's given by this product rule. Okay? States and can be thought of as functions on effects and vice versa, as it is normally the case here too. But now the difference is that this is now, this is not a convex theory. The set of states and effects is not closed under convex combination in this thing. And this is natural because the probabilities for some events in some region depend on what you connected to. So you cannot, if I define the operations in the way that I did, which have local description, you cannot make this extension. You can conceive mathematically the extension, but it doesn't correspond to what we postulate is the notion of an operation. So this theory will not be convex, but that's how it is. Which the states here is defined as I mean the states are the equivalent. It's something like an unnormalized density matrix, and another normalized density matrix, which is the sum of your the states that of the preparation device from which this came out, from which the row came out. So maybe I can go back to explain that. Where was it? Yeah, here. Basically, here I define. So you have a preparation device which outputs, but for the preparation, this is quite easy still. It outputs a collection of possible unnormalized density matrices. The sum of them, which appears in the denominator, I just label it by rho bar for just to simplify, because this is on, these are the two parameters, well, collections of parameters on which the joint probability depends. So we notice that these are equivalence classes. We notice that the collection of the specific row for the specific output event that I consider and this guy, the row bar, which is the sum, is necessary and sufficient to describe the joint probabilities for any detection that I might put here. And the same holds for this, for these guys, for the detection events. But at the end, we are not going to really use this representation.
It's kind of with regard to the preparations regard to effect, yes. Quite radical because
yes.
You're suggesting there's no real sense of there being a, yes. A probability one. It's only you choose a set and then you make that probability one in some sense.
Yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So we can also consider, what is this? A conditional states, of course. We can consider conditional states. And in fact, this will be important later because when I go to the process matrix framework, the process matrix will be regarded as a kind of conditional state on which we do detections only. But just to say conditionally on some preparation event, we can calculate what this is. And one sees that for each preparation event, it's just a collection of two identical, so it's a pair of two identical matrices. So we see that the parameters needed to describe your conditional state are just the same as in normal quantum mechanics. It's a density matrix, rho bar, except that now the rho is a bit different. Rho bar is a normalized density matrix, I mean. So this is the rule for that we have for some effect to be applied on your conditional state, to occur on your conditional state, yeah. So the same thing one can do for general operations. One can normalize, and again, there is a collection of completely positive maps, a pair. One is normalized somehow, and the other is smaller. Later in the Choi-Minkowski isomorphism, this would be just the same as before, some matrices. So now I just want to say, okay, this obviously is time symmetric, but maybe not immediately obvious, but at least what we have achieved is that the set of operations from A to B is isomorphic to the set of operations from B to A. This was not the case before because it is due to the fact that somehow detection operations on a given system are smaller than preparation operations, smaller in number somehow. So every circuit, however, can be equivalently seen as can be read equivalently in the opposite direction by replacing every completely positive map that appears to it by the transpose completely positive map defined like this. So given a completely positive map in a Krauss form, you can define this one. And for example, you can see that, let's say you have this preparation, some general thing, and a measurement or detection. This gives disjoint probabilities. Equivalently, they're equal to the same thing right in the opposite direction. Okay, but we would like something more. I mean, we have seen that the operations of Alice, maybe we can describe them in this time symmetric language, at least, either as going forward or backward, but we would like to see if we can have a time neutral description in the sense that can we view Alice's operations as applied on two systems, one, let's say, coming forward in time, the other backward or oriented, because here we will see that systems are not really moving in the picture that we develop. So in other words, this question wants to capture this idea that given knowledge about the rest of the circuit, can we associate some kind of object, mathematical object or state from which Alice's outcomes can be computed, which is say that there is some kind of state coming to her laboratory from, let's say, both past and the future in this intuitive language. And I mean, for instance, more generally, if we have a collection of operations, can we view them again like measurements of some kind on a global quantum state, local measurements? And this we would like to do even more. I mean, this question is motivated by the desire to develop something that goes beyond definite connections. And this has been of interest recently, and because it is expected to be related to quantum gravity, where the metric or causal order can be expected to be indefinite. Also, it has attracted interest in the context of quantum information processing as some kind of tool for higher order operations applied on black boxes. So these are some of the motivations. So this brings me now to the process matrix framework. In the original, this is based on this paper, and the original idea behind it was based on this idea that we have local experimenters residing again in these closed boxes associated with an input and an output, and they perform operations. And in that framework, we used the Choi-Minkowski special version of this Choi-Minkowski isomorphism to represent the operations of the parties. So So the Choi isomorphism associates positive operators to any completely positive map. So you have a completely positive map from some space of operators to another. You take the tensor product of the input and output, and you can associate a positive semi-definite matrix there. And it's given by this rule. Specifically here, I use a specifically designed rule with a suitable normalization. There is an extra transposition to the normal one, but there is just for convenience. This is normally known as the channel state duality, but I jokingly call it channel effect duality, because what we really do is to use this to represent the effects in our theory in this form. We're going to see the CP maps roughly as effects, so to speak. So in the original formulation, we assumed non-contextual linear probabilities, and this gave rise to a representation of this kind, where you have, say, Alice, Bob, Charlie, they perform certain operations, and their outcomes are given by some completely positive map. The assumption was, of course, that these certain operations are the standard quantum operations. They sum up to trace-preserving maps. And the representation that we have for the joint probabilities, which by assumption only depend on the specific CP maps for the outcomes, is given by that thing. Now, this can capture all scenarios obtained without post-selection in a definite causal structure. So, or to say it in other words, where the operations are part of a circuit. Without post-selection, any scenario that we can construct where Alice, Bob, Charlie occupy specific locations in a circuit will be represented like this. But this can also capture probabilistic mixtures of such scenarios, as well as certain things that are not even probabilistic mixtures. We have found a task and which is related to a causal inequality, which we show that it is violated by some process matrices that satisfy the constraints. The constraints come from the normalization on completely positive maps and the assumption that probability should be non-negative. But we're now going to go beyond this. Before that, however, let me give an example of how this thing works. Imagine that we have Alice, who is doing only preparation, and Bob is doing just detection, and they are connected through this wire from one to the other. In this Choi-Milkovsky representation that I just showed, the POVM elements of Bob, here I'm considering standard operations, meaning that these are POVM summing up to the identity. They are just the CP maps. And for a preparation device, the CP maps are given by this, the dimension of the system times the transpose of the output state. And the joint probabilities are given by this formula, where this is the process matrix for this particular scenario. This is just the choice state of the identity channel. Now, but what I want to stress here is that already in that formalism, the original one, we have two systems to describe even a situation of this kind, where Bob's operation is immediately after Alice. So, again, we have the choice state of the identity channel is necessary to describe that. So we have basically two different systems in that scenario, not just a single system. And what we should emphasize here is that A2 is actually not the output system of Alice. I mean, we started with this representing the CP maps in the Choi-Milkovsky map, isomorphism and so forth, but actually the output system of Alice is B1 in this picture. So this A2 is another system. And we're going to use this system. We'll give it an interpretation. So how shall we interpret it? Well, now we can go to the time symmetric formulation. So we allow this more general notion of measurements that we discussed before. And the joint probabilities, one can see that they will be given by that. And for instance, if we look at the conditional probabilities for Bob, the process matrix is just the state prepared by Alice. And if we consider the conditional probabilities for Alice, one can see that they are given by some matrix that lives here, which is related to the events that take place in Bob's laboratory. So this is what suggests that we should regard A2 just like an input from the future, because as we said, this is Alice's output, but this depends on Bob's events, just in the same way as the system living here, the state living on this system depends on Alice's events. So that's kind of the idea. This thing here is a version of what has been called retrodictive states, and has appeared, for instance, in these papers. Just should say that our definition here, it differs by a transposition from what in those pictures you use. That this comes from, I guess, from the fact that we use two systems and an entangled state on them. So in the general case, we will have Alice again perform. Here we don't assume now anymore a specific causal structure, but we'll assume again that this more general notion of operation for Alice, Bob, and so forth. And one can write the joint probabilities like that. So given specific operations taking place in the boxes, and of course there is some variable that defines the whole setup in which these boxes are embedded, but now this variable may involve post-selection. And the probabilities for the outcomes are given just by this formula, which looks just like the rule that we saw before for detection events on a conditional state. This process matrix here can now be any positive semi-definite matrix normalized to one. We take it normalized to one because it makes no difference to consider different overall factors. Know that any such process matrix can be created using post-selection. I will explain how in a minute, but what one can see is that the conditional, one can calculate what is the conditional reduced process matrix given, for instance, you have two parties, Alice and Bob, some kind of event happens in Bob's laboratory. Conditionally on that event, you can update the local description of the process matrix for Alice, and it is exactly the same that we normally use when you have a joint state on part of which you do some operation, you obtain some outcome, and you calculate the reduced thing. And one can see that any process matrix can be created using this update rule if you just add sufficiently many systems, and essentially you can teleport, you can prepare a state, a standard state, which has the exact same form as W, and you can, with using post-selection, you can teleport it on the respective systems. So you can, in this way, obtain any process matrix. But there are process matrices that are not, that don't correspond to standard circuits. This we have already seen in the original process matrix formulation, and they can be obtained without post-selection. So this formalism is not necessarily a thing that just describes situations created by pre and post-selection in a circuit. It could be something that goes beyond the circuit already using just pre-selection, like, for example, mixtures. So we can generalize even more. We can notice that since we are allowing to create operations by post-selection, Alice and Bob, by using entanglement and post-selection, they can effectively perform any non-local operation, in fact, on this process matrix. So we really obtain a completely general scenario where we just have something that we call a state in this new, of course, language that we introduced, which is given by the positive matrix W, and measurements or detections of some kind on it, which are, again, the main rule that we use is that. So. So this suggests that we don't have to label the systems by the laboratories because we can go beyond these local operations anyway. For example, it may be more convenient to label the systems by some notion of locality. For example, you have, say, some manifold, some underlying manifold on which you want to build a theory, and maybe it is natural in this manifold you have some notion of points, and maybe you associate systems with these points. So it doesn't have to be labeled by Alice, Bob, and so forth. So most generally, we have this kind of formula. You just have a global state, and some kind of different possible measurements are possible on it. I mean, they could be local, they could be global. You can obtain these cases too. It's just a state and measurement in this, of course, modified language that I introduced. So now I want to discuss.
Ron, did you just tell us an update rule for this global state?
Yes. The update rule was if you know what is happening, for example, you have a bipartite state and you know that you have specific outcome on. Could be in space-time, it could be in between Alice and Bob, it could be between any systems. You have a bunch of systems on which we define this global state. You just take some subset of the system and call it Alice and the other Bob. So if we learn that specific event or specific outcome occurs on Bob's side, we can calculate an effective reduced state for Alice's side, which is just the way we normally calculate states, update for standard states in quantum mechanics. Yes. It looks exactly the same. Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, this is obviously very closely related to the Aharonov, Bergman, and Leibovitz approach, where they. But there are some differences, especially with the original formulation. So the two-state vector is defined such that the backward evolving state, they have a notion of states evolving. Here we don't have states evolving, but that's, let's say, a minor, maybe a matter of language. The backward evolving state lives in the dual Hilbert space of the forward evolving one. They take inner products between something that goes forward and backward, whereas in the formalism that I outlined, we cannot associate a number to something in the forward-oriented system and the backward-oriented system. You only associate a number when you contract states and effects, loosely speaking. I mean, the operators of that describe the states and those that describe the outcomes, the events. But this formalism previously has been generalized. It has been generalized to multi-time states, which basically, of course, they give the same predictions in the same cases, whether we would use our formalism or this formalism. I would just say that I think the formalism that I described is somehow much more convenient than this one. Because here, due to the fact that they define the duals to be the backward evolving states, one has to worry about more complicated formulas, for instance, to describe, let's say, the outcomes, the probability for the outcomes of three measurements and so forth. But I found out actually very recently, just last week, about a paper which does something extremely close to what I just described. I mean, they try to develop a notion like a density matrix in this in this two-state vector formalism. So this is the work by Silva, Gurianova, Brunner, Linden, Short, Popescu. They develop a formalism, and they notice actually this. They notice an isomorphism that can represent anything of this thing. I mean, the probabilities for the outcomes of any measurement between pre and post selection, as if something with positive out matrices on a state. So they basically establish exactly isomorphism to the thing that I outlined. And they even make a note that if we regard a measurement as something incomplete, like an incomplete set of outcomes, then we kind of have a full isomorphism between what they call a measurement on the forward and backward propagating states and a bipartite measurement. I did not understand whether they are proposing to reformulate the usual two-state vector approach in this language. They still refer to a notion of complete measurement from which you select through, by post-selection, a subset of outcomes. But here I should emphasize that one of the ideas here is that we do not have a complete notion of, just the theory does not claim that there exists complete notion of like a complete set of events, which is more complete than others. There is not this, the POVM is a special case, and you might ask, okay, but I know that there is something about it. I mean, it is true that if I don't do post-selection, the complete set of outcomes will have to be described by some POVM. I cannot know, so the theorist really seems to be telling me the standard formulation, something non-trivial, but I'll try to argue that this actually is not, may be viewed not as a property of the theory, not the basic rule of the theory, but rather a statement about the dynamics or the final, or some final conditions of the universe. So here now, this brings me to discuss the question about causation, which I mentioned at the beginning. Now, I like this very much, this title of Rob's talk in Beranski. If correlation doesn't imply causation, then what does? And I think this is, I agree. I think that in some way it has to have to do, of course, with correlation. But there's probably something more. Let's see what we can say about that. Actually, what exactly is causation? I mean, the common view is that the notion of intervention is essential to make sense. And for instance, in the work of Perot, he makes a distinction between a variable X, around a variable X, and what he calls do X, which is associated with intervention. But what exactly is intervention? I mean, if you want to put this in physical terms, it is not immediately obvious. And if, for example, one can say that in the language of causal diagrams, a variable that represents intervention has no causal ancestors, but clearly this is not a definition itself. This is just a statement. It doesn't say what intervention is or what causation is. So can we have some kind of notion which is intervention-free? Actually, it already exists in the standard formulation of quantum mechanics of in some form. I mean, or also in the process, the original process framework. I mean, we can say that if the choice of Alice's operation is correlated with the outcome of Bob, we have signaling from Alice to Bob. And for the purpose of this talk, I'll regard signaling and causation essentially as equivalent concepts. But of course, this definition fails if we want to apply to the time symmetric theory, because by the very way we defined what we call operation, it would mean, for instance, that an operation here can influence something happening over there, over a space-like separated distance. But clearly, this is not signaling, or at least it doesn't contradict what we put in the notion of causality, because this notion of operation is not something that is up to the choice of an agent in that framework. So, yes?
So your new definition, I'm not exactly sure in what way it innovates beyond the interventionist definition, because I mean,
I did this way.
Let me ask you a question. So clearly, you know, if the choice of Alice's operation and the outcome of Bob had a common cause, you wouldn't want to say there's a causal influence from one to the other. So I think what you mean here is that Alice's choice was free, and if I see a correlation between Bob's outcome and Alice's free choice, then I assume there's a causal structure.
Sure.
But then what's a free choice besides something that doesn't have causal ancestors?
You will see in the new definition that I propose. It's not the definition that I propose, but this is the thing that we can say already in the language of quantum mechanics. And to answer this, I would say that in the this is an answer to the notion, so it's a definition in the language of circuits. So in the language of circuits, already somehow the idea that an operation is freely chosen is there. So we're not speaking about how it is chosen, but the language of circuits as a framework for quantum mechanics claims what are the joint probabilities when you put these different things. So it doesn't say that someone is choosing it explicitly. It doesn't refer to how the operation comes about, but says what the joint probabilities would be. And so we can say, for instance, that if I have some region here and another region here, and the situation is such that for different things I conceive putting, I obtain signaling, I can say there is signaling. I'm saying it is just expressed in the language of of the theory, and that's all I meant. But I think I can now address the more. Is this your...
If you're not presuming that Alice's choice is somehow free,
yes,
but you're just saying, look, we observe a correlation between her choice and Bob's outcome, then why do you think that that's proves causal influence? Because I can explain that perfectly well with a common cause.
Sure you can. I'm saying that within the framework of circuits, which by definition says that each of these boxes is isolated, it captures what you just said, but it enters already at the level of the definition of the theory. It says when you have two boxes and they are connected, the only that there is no possible way that some other influence is coming. The only influence, for instance, is through the wire that connects them. It is basically, I think this is my answer to that. This philosophical, what you're asking is essentially equivalent, how do I know that the box is closed? I don't know, and I cannot answer. And I don't, of course, I will not even propose an answer to this. But indeed, I understand the problem, and it is there. We don't know, I cannot define in terms of correlations only what it means for one region to be really, the operation need to be isolated. I don't know how to define that, but it's a postulate in the formulation. It's just I'm pointing out that there exists a way of saying what causality means in the language of the theory fully, without having to speak explicitly about, for instance, intervention or agents, but at some level implicitly, how do we know that this is really a circuit? You have to believe that something is free and so forth. This is the case, yes. I'm just pointing out that at the level of the formulation of the theory, we can say it. We can say it in the language of the theory without having to invoke explicitly the notion of intervention. But if you start thinking about other hidden variables and so forth, then you're going, first you're going out of the theory. And then obviously we don't, I don't know how one can answer that.
Are we supposed to think of these boxes as actual laboratory things? Or suppose you're interested in quantum gravity, right?
Yes.
Are you thinking that there's a little laboratory everywhere, or is this supposed to be more general,
yeah,
that the box should be something beyond a human-related object?
I imagine that we can think that there are boxes everywhere, not necessarily. You can put boxes in different places. You can make a cut. I will talk about this in the next thing. You can make a cut and imagine that in this cut there is a box. So it's kind of dependent on the observer, but given some observer, we assume that we have a consistent description about the classical events that describe our experiments. And for this, we give joint probabilities. So where exactly you put your box, one can shift the cut in principle. I will come to this sort of space-time picture. So just let me say how we can maybe address this, the fact that the previous thing fails in the time-symmetric formulation. So we notice that, for example, here are cases in which we will say that this represents no signaling between Alice and Bob. I mean, the theory, the picture itself says this is the only causal influence. This is the joint state is given to Alice and Bob. In that case, we normally, in the language of quantum mechanics, we say correlations of this kind do not represent influence. And what we notice is that these are correlations between the forward-oriented inputs, these ones, the blue ones. But if we consider, for example, a situation where we have signaling from Alice to Bob, like this, a state is given to Alice, then her output goes through a channel to Bob. The process matrix has a form for this scenario, a form of this kind. And in this case, the correlations are between A2 and B1. And so this suggests that maybe we can define a notion of causation in that framework or signaling by considering correlations between systems of two different types. Of course, it's possible in such a scenario where Alice is operating before Bob to have a process matrix which somehow hides the correlations. If you just look at the matrix itself, you might not see the correlations between A2 and B1, for instance, this matrix. But I mean, again, conditionally on some event which is only on the input of Alice, conditionally on that, we can open a channel from A2 to B1. And so it can become explicit. So I think it's reasonable to consider to define a notion of signaling by correlations between the two types of systems. So so the proposal is this. You have different systems in different places, and we can speak that there is signaling or causation between from an observable which lives on a forward-oriented system to an observable that lives on the vice versa, the backward to the forward, in circumstances defined by some variables W, if the joint distribution is correlated. Now, by these circumstances, I imagine for the moment the standard situations that we normally conceive, which are created without post-selection. And by definition, this signaling is defined between observables of the two different types. So if you have observables of the same color, they're not, this is not called signaling by definition. So this is a definition just. But the not, yeah? Sure. Which one is this? Yeah. I will come to that. I don't know, actually. I don't know. I think I have some ideas, for instance, in the... yes, this is one of the, let's say, very important questions. How do I know? What are the distinctions between these two types of systems? I think I can remember how it came about. So what I can do is at least I can make the following map to the original, to the standard formulation. I can say that you, if you are in a closed lab, which of course I cannot define, but it's a postulate and we believe that this notion exists. If you're in a closed lab and you do something on your system and you send it out, and then I'm in a closed lab and I, relative to my local time, I receive something, we observe correlations, I would say that you did an observable on the forward-oriented system. Remember, these observables on the forward-oriented systems, they're just state preparation, standard. They were exactly state preparation operations. So that would be the claim. But what is exactly you're saying? What is a state preparation operation? How do I know? Well, it is part of the standard. The same question can be asked, of course, in the standard formulation of quantum mechanics. And how do we know? I don't know how we know, but we use the formalism. So this is not to resolve that question. Here, the assumption of a local experiment is assumed somehow. The question here was only, can I modify somehow the usual definition to make it compatible with the time symmetric? Because there I saw a problem. I mean, if I simply say choice of operation, then it doesn't correspond to what we normally believe is signaling. But now, at least with this, it corresponds exactly in cases without post-selection, this definition exactly corresponds to the other one that I said. If you have a circuit or even in the process matrix formalism, choice of operation at some point, correlated to the outcome of the other, this will correspond to this definition.
Mm-hmm. On that same question,
I will hurry up. Yes?
If you want to say more, I mean, the two different types, we're supposed to intuitively think about type one as preparation and type two as a detection, or is this just some arbitrary color that you've introduced that you're enriching the theory with just some new label
so
that tells
moment,
whether it's type one or type two?
Yes,
or?
So I don't know exactly what to do about this. So it arises from starting from a circuit, for example. There it arises naturally. I use Choi-Minkowski representation. In this representation, I have a clear, well, mathematical notion, but at the end of the day, everything is mathematical notion. This Hilbert space are mathematical notions associated with procedures. So there, I know what it means to do that. It's just what we normally call state preparation. But now, if I don't have a global causal structure, however, it becomes really a question, how do I know what is forward, what is backward in time? And I don't really know. I will ask this question at the end. But for the moment, what I point out is that if we had a local distinction given by us from someone, I don't know how it arises, but if I have a local distinction between the forward and the backward-oriented systems, I can express in these terms the notion of signaling within this theory. That's the observation. Somehow this distinction between the two types of systems I regard as some kind of primitive notion of local time, if you wish. Okay, I will skip to that. I just want to emphasize this definition. The signaling was coincides with the circumstances obtained without post-selection, but does it make sense in cases obtained with post-selection? I don't know. For instance, one can ask, are post-selected closed time-like curves true closed time-like curves? These kind of closed time-like curves are allowed in our formalism. I don't know, but at least in the language of this framework, these cases are equivalent. Of course, one we obtain with post-selection, and this means that we have some global notion of time. We have some memory arrow of time, and we know that we have to wait and see whether we will succeed or not. Maybe in some regions of the universe, these things arise without having to do that. I don't know, but why not? At least in this framework, they appear to be equivalent. So I propose this as a possible extension, which coincides with the usual notion of signaling in cases in which for which we all agree. And then it can. So just in the last few minutes, let me say a little bit about how I see this as a potential approach to address more ambitious questions, maybe related to gravity and so forth. So this is just some, for example, some toy model that how we can might think about some discrete version of a field theory, just to suggest some ideas. And of course, the goal is to go into more sophisticated models. But for instance, you can imagine that you have something, let's say this is your manifold to begin with. And in each point, you have this maximally entangled state with the forward and backward oriented systems. Now, as I said, I don't know from where this distinction should be postulated as fundamental. Does it arise? I don't know. But for the moment, for instance, we can assume that it is given to us, that locally I have distinction between blue and green. And then I can write for this thing a master process matrix, which would be just the tensor product of the individual guys. They are not oriented in the same direction. I'm just orienting them here for, because it was easy to construct. I mean, there are a point, like there is no notion of direction yet. But then we can, now starting from this master process matrix, using the update rule, we can calculate, for instance, given knowledge about the dynamics somewhere, we can ask what is the state here and make predictions for that. So, for example, let's say you're given, somehow from somewhere that in certain regions between certain points there are certain events going on. Then with the free wires we can associate a process matrix or reduced state, calculating it, for example, in this way. Or we can consider it, we can consider states associated with regions. This is the cut that I mentioned. This the approach of Oeckel, the general boundary formulation of quantum field theory, which, however, is continuous. So here, I have not yet established the exact correspondence between these things. I'm not sure whether the same probability rules apply in both approaches. What one can notice is that the notion of causal structure, for example, in a standard flat space-time, let's say, in this discrete toy model, is something related to the dynamics. So the dynamics, when you impose it, when you learn, or when you know what it is, it gives a notion of causal structure. One can see, of course, this by definition would be compatible with the notion of causation that I said before. If I were to make a cut somewhere and look at the signaling, it would be. But what I wanted to say before is that you see the notion that normally we think that the completeness relation of should be, it carries some non-trivial meaning. I mean, that the Born rule is, we feel that it tells us something rather non-trivial. But maybe we can also view it, again, as I said before, as a special case of the more general rule, and see the claim about the fact that without post-selection, I cannot, let's say, prepare one of the operations that I defined, as a statement about the dynamics, the form of the dynamics, and the future boundary condition, for example. In that case, in such a case, you wouldn't be able to have information about, you wouldn't be able, without post-selection, using just unitaries, to prepare in the past somehow an operation that is not trace-preserving. So, of course, can this is the big goal, is can we use this approach somehow to gain insights into how to construct theories without definite causal structure or some variation of it? And again, this question that you raised, is the distinction between green and blue a fundamental or is it emergent? I don't know. Maybe it is emergent. Maybe if I only have a local notion of the distinction, by the dynamics I can propagate it and find out what it is. Then the notion of causation that I defined then wouldn't seem that fundamental. Maybe then everything emerges from something else. Okay, I don't know. But to conclude, so I tried to argue that maybe we can see quantum mechanics as a time-symmetric operational probabilistic theory of a certain kind, not a convex one, if we drop the assumption that there are special complete operations. So the theory only tells us this, it tells us what will be the probabilities for the outcomes given the operations, but it doesn't say that this operation must occur, it should have this constraint. It so happens that without post-selection, we cannot create those. The Choyang-Kolsky isomorphism and the requirement to have this local description or local state gave the idea of two types of systems at each point, which allow us to treat quantum mechanics in space-time as static quantum mechanics of the more general kind that I defined. The formalism is directly related to the two-state vector formalism, but I think it's because we treat the two kinds of states as associated with different systems, this naturally gives rise to an elegant formalism. It also is supposed to capture situations beyond definite causal structure. This is one of the intents behind. Now, assuming local distinction between forward and backward system, we can give some intervention-independent definition of causation. Of course, it is theory-dependent, which agrees with the usual notion in cases without postulation. And the framework, as I said, generalizes the previous formalism, so including close time-like curves, other exotic structures, and so forth. So I believe it may suggest perhaps new ways of thinking about quantum gravity. And as I have run out of time. So here I will just list a few questions that I think are interesting, and I will leave you maybe to read them. Thank you for your attention.
So in one of your conclusions, you told us if we accept this distinction between the forward and the backward, locally forward and locally backward system, then we can define causation. I know you told us, but I didn't quite understand. Can you just simply repeat? What is exactly the definition
of
signaling or causation? Once we accept this distinction?
Simply correlations between the two types of systems. So if you have an observable on this system and observable on the other, in some circumstances, of course, everything is conditional probability. So given some knowledge about what is happening somewhere, for instance, the preparation of your setup, you might have correlations between these observables. When you calculate the joint probabilities, they might be correlated. And then you would say that in this case, you have signaling from this observable to that. So one is the cause, the other is the effect. But of course, this definition is symmetric also. I forgot to emphasize this fact, but you can, under time's reversal, you can call this the cause and this the effect, which I find a little bit appealing, considering that in classical gravity, the notion of causal structures.
So if there's a correlation between any two, a red and a green, or whatever they were, yellow and blue, yes, then that's a cause. And the direction in which it goes is conventional. But normally we would say it goes from the preparation type system detection type system.
That's right.
So now could you sort of take us through, with the question that Rob asked, could you take us through how it all works out in some EPR type situations?
Well, in the EPR type situations, we would simply have correlations between the two blue systems, which by definition is not causation. That would be the answer. This is not, of course, asking the deep questions. It's not addressing the deep problems which are.
But why is it not so? There was a common cause in the past that actually made a correlation. So something in the past sent me a message telling me to set my apparatus this way. And also it sent you a signal which you detected, which told you that the apparatus has been, that I was instructed to set my apparatus this way. And I followed the instructions, so I'm obedient to the instructions. So there is a correlation between my setting and the outcome over at the other side. So now, what's the story that goes with this so that it's not?
Well, what you just described would mean that in this circuit framework, or this goes beyond circuits, but again, it is based on the notion of a local experiment where, by definition, your only communication is established through the input or output system. So if you say, I receive instructions of what operation to do, in the language of standard quantum circuits or in this modified version, you would have to say that you would have to include an extra wire and extend the description of your operation onto a larger system to see this, how your choice is conditioned on this information from the past. By definition, it is in these frameworks, all the communication is there. So when you draw a circuit, all the wires represent everything that there is to be communicated, all the information flow according to the theory.
So is my setting now, my setting is no longer a preparation type event now?
No. Preparation type events, they are not the settings actually. Well, they could be. Setting could be seen as a preparation type event in a certain case, but it is important in that case, it is really. But again, one should define a new notion of local experiment. So to tell you exactly what a preparation kind of a preparation event looks like, it is the following. You stay in a closed box somewhere. You do whatever you do. You prepare some state. You send it out. And that's the only way. So that's a preparation event. And then the only way that communication goes to other possible experimenters is through the system that you sent out through a hole. The blue thing is what goes forward, but in the language with the yellow or green thing, yes, you are actually, this is seen in this this language, it is seen as if you're operating what you did. This preparation was actually a measurement of a sort on the green thing that's coming from the future. So
what kind of event is it if I do a preparation based on some other input that I've got? It tells me how to choose the preparation. Is it blue? Is it green? Is it, cyan? I mean, is it neither blue nor green?
Probably it's neither blue nor green, because...
So not every event can be characterized as either blue or green.
No. I would say, at least for the moment, I have not defined this more general thing, yeah. So as I said, already one can notice this in the case where there is this hidden signaling. I mean, but you can make the signaling explicit by performing an operation on the, for example, on the thing that tells you what to do. Then conditionally on that, you can view that you have established a communication channel between the right color of system and another. So this was a definition for what I can define, which is just the basic notion of explicit signaling, and you can have more general cases. But I think we can try to analyze those more complicated cases in the simple language of just correlations of simple preparation kind and simple detection. That's the idea.
So there might be a third color.
No, maybe. Or we have superpositions of these operations, which are, I mean, a general operation, you can, of course, at the level of superpositions, you can see it's a coherent superposition of preparation and detection and preparation events.
But I mean, the question is, can you maintain that simple definition that any correlation between a preparation type event and a detection type event is a signal?
At least for the special kinds of events, we can postulate it, but then.
For the special ones, but yes. Then in this more general setting,
yes, I don't know. I cannot develop it there. Yes, okay, I don't know. It was the observation that we can have this definition. It can capture, it can, for instance, whenever you have a channel, a signaling channel from one point to another in the standard language, it can be verified to be the case by doing this preparation and detection events for the cases in which this channel really establishes communication. If you average over some other variables, you might not see the correlation, but that's the standard. I mean, if you have another variable, you have different channels such that on average, basically you don't see the communication. But if you knew this other variable, you can communicate. So it's proposed as a definition of the basic thing, out of which hopefully we can build the more complicated cases.
Any other questions? No? Okay, we'll see.